Living with Christ, Commentary for the March 14, 2026 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person, and they with me. Revelation 3, verse 20. As a child, I had two younger sisters and a younger brother. We lived with our mother and father during a time that seemed somewhat more feral than today. During the school year, we spent much of the week attending classes in public schools that ostensibly sought to tame that wildness and turn us into productive adults with a sense of community and patriotic love for our country. How successful that agenda was is often debated as we have struggled through several wars and civil uprisings since those early decades of my life. To a degree, the family home provided a refuge from things that would threaten us as children. While the schools were responsible for our safety and well-being during the day, during the afternoons that responsibility passed to the various households. Some were better than others at this. During the summers, when school was not in session, and any income-earning parents, usually the fathers, were absent from the home, the children were often turned out in the morning after a simple breakfast and left to fend for themselves until evening when the street lamps came on. Naturally, this was a recipe for unsupervised mischief like vandalism, petty theft, and shoplifting. Though we grew up in a small town, there was little difference between our penchant for finding ways of getting into trouble and the metropolitan teens in Leonard Bernstein's and Stephen Sondheim's West Side Story, set in that great American Gotham, New York City. Despite these excesses, there are some positives that came with this lifestyle. At an early age and into our teens, we freely moved between our home and those of our friends. And their parents assumed responsibility for our safety and guidance without question. This meant that parents were not reluctant to welcome stray children into the home with hugs and shelter when needed. Neither were they reluctant to dole out punishment if a child turned abusive or destructive toward others. Today, should a parent discipline a child not theirs, an outcry would ensue, 911 would be called, and the police would soon arrive to sort out the matter, hopefully before things devolved into a neighborhood brawl. But back over half a century ago, if a child was slapped for daring to cheekily sass an adult, or was spanked to convey the idea of respect for others and their property, if that child had the temerity to report it to their parents, the response they could get would be, "You probably deserved it." If the error was outrageous enough, the parent might even add their own corporal punishment to that already doled out. Despite these differences from today, the sense that it takes a village to raise a child was present as long as dysfunctionalities like alcoholism or mental illness did not assert themselves. Some of the best memories from childhood were the times children would be playing at one home or another, and the adults in residence would pass out treats, popsicles, Kool-Aid, cookies, or some other snacks. These occasions bonded us as family, even though we were from different households and diverse backgrounds. 70 years later, I still remember popsicles made from Tupperware molds and bright-colored aluminum tumblers with ice-cold Kool-Aid while sitting in the shade during a sweltering summer afternoon. We did not live in a wealthy neighborhood. It would probably be considered lower middle class by sociologists. We had pensioners, divorced single parents with children on assistance, and laborers and small business owners trying to get a leg up in life. Most never figured out the formula to become well off, but we managed to function as a community and show compassion for one another. Although times have changed, I still see some of that compassion occasionally shine through on social media. Even though trolling seems to have become a way of life for some, with harshness toward others over trivial matters, there are those who stand out for their kindness and empathy toward those with fewer blessings in life. Maybe if there were not so many ways to interact without the sharing of bread with one another, things would be different. To add insult to the injury, food has more often become a barrier than a boon to fellowship. Instead of pooling resources, as used to be done to come up with enough for all, we adhere to strict diets for social, religious, or health reasons and refuse to associate with those who do not accommodate those preferences. A family member, long deceased, even refused to enjoy meals with others if they did not eat the right number of meals at the right times of day. He did not begin that way, but over time his dining habits became even more bizarre, venerating health reform over bonding with others over meals, as was customary in the early church. We could learn a lesson from cats in this. We have several feral cats that roam our neighborhood. As we would share food with wandering children decades ago, we also do so for cats and set out fresh water and kitty kibble for the abandoned felines. Since we were already feeding our own household cats, it took little extra effort to provide for a few more. Three have regularly visited the food and water dishes. A female calico we christened Smudge because of the color of her coat was first. She was barely out of kittenhood and devoured everything she was offered. Her coat was matted and she was underweight, but over time that changed. Initially, she was afraid to draw near, but now she comes for pets as well as food. I think a neighbor has informally adopted her, as she is looking much better groomed lately. The second cat we named Tabs, because he has beautiful tabby markings. When he showed up, he was 6 to 9 months old. He had been bullied by other ferals and driven away by people, so he was very fearful and still struggled with that fear. Nonetheless, he is appreciative of the food and no longer automatically runs when he sees me filling the food bowl. I have found a small measure of trust in his heart, a precious milestone. The third feral is older and has an ear torn from fighting. So far, he has lived too long with abuse and a hard life to demonstrate any trust of man or beast. It breaks my heart that he had no one to come to his aid when he was abandoned. He is a living miracle. We have coyotes who live in the area who took one of our own cats years ago, leaving only his collar as evidence. This is why we only have housebound pets now. This older feral has a lot of white, like a long-haired tuxedo in his coat, which could make it easy for coyotes to spot him. His fear of anything and everything may be the only thing that has helped him survive. When I look back on my childhood and I consider these cats and their personalities, I realize that they are metaphors for the ministry of Jesus. He freely moved among the homes of the people, just as we did as children, and like the feral cats, he seeks to discover if he will be welcomed and fed in our homes. Eating together, fellowshipping as family, and sharing the common joys of life were things Jesus intimately understood. He saw them as removing barriers that otherwise grow between people. The Gospels make this point strongly with Jesus' example, bringing the people together and feeding them with bread and fish. Thousands were welcomed to be part of those meals, and their hearts were so open toward him through the simple meal provided, they would have made him king had he allowed it, according to John 6, verses 1 through 15. We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars as Christians on campaigns designed to show others how we are right theologically and prophetically, because being right has become more important than living a life of compassion and love. We seek to prove our rightness, to prove we are living like Jesus, not realizing that we are no nearer Jesus than if we had never met him. I could lecture our visiting feral kitties on how much better it is to be living as a pet in a loving home, but that will not get them to trust me or to seek out a warm and cozy home for themselves. I could never convince them to accept the doctrine of pethood, no matter how logical and well-sourced my argument might be. But if I feed and water them, I make them feel welcome and loved in my presence. It will soften their hearts. They will grow to trust what I say to them. Love and compassion will feed their hearts as food has fed their bellies. My understanding of that will save me as much as it saves them. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to books by the author, as well as other articles and sermonettes. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.